I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru, Om. 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 I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru, Om. Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru, Om. Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru, Om. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name. Thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru, Om. Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru, Om. Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru, Om. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get autumn over thy name. I will sing. Thy name I will drain, thy name I dare all the cold. Thy name I will sing, thy name I will drain, thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get all the gold in thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get all the gold in thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name, and get all the gold in thy name. I will sing thy name, I will drink thy name. My Guru, come to me, come to me, oh, come to me. Oh, my Guru, come to me, come to me, oh, come to me. Oh, my Guru, come to me, come to me, oh, come to me. Oh, my Guru, come to me.
You know, normally my satsang topics come to me automatically at the last minute. But this morning I had a discussion about some questions that could be asked. And it's been percolating in my wee little brain all day long. So we'll have two sections. I want to talk about the question that came up this morning. And then we'll talk about Advaita. question was asked, really, how does a student know his or her true guru? How do you learn how to discriminate amongst all the hundreds and thousands of gurus out there, who is yours? But isn't this question almost identical to how do I find my soulmate? How do I find my perfect partner? How do I buy the right car? Well, with a car, it's easier. It's what you can afford and what the consumer guides say. But when it comes to gurus or soulmates, there's really a lack of information around it. Matter of fact, the soulmate spectrum has no... there's nothing, no information out there. It's potluck. It's trial and error, hit and miss, mostly miss. And when it comes to gurus, there's that one website that talks all about the various gurus and their consumer ratings according to various students. But isn't it obvious that there's no true guru, really? It's the gurus you run into, they have access to. It's where you are at that particular moment in space and time, and what he or she said at that particular time. Sometimes the first teacher you ever go to is your true guru, but you don't know it for 5 years. You go to 20 gurus after that, and then one day a memory comes of that person, the first person, and you go back and you realize that person was your true teacher after all. One definition I heard recently about how do you know whether a person is your guru or not. You keep showing up at satsang. How do you feel around this person? Are you happy? What do you feel? If you feel happy, if you feel complete, you feel loved, that's the right person. If you keep coming back, that's the right person. Or at least until you stop coming. But you know, it's so hard to find real information on the teachers out there. For example, Facebook. I think there are 1,862,000 teachers on Facebook. Each one of them has 300,000 followers, and they do not like criticism of their teacher in any way, shape, or form, or negativity on any of their comments, or they'll kill you. So where do you find information on teachers? There's not really a lot of places out there that you can find that information. It's all hit and miss, more or less. However, I do have a surefire way of finding a true guru. If they wear a shirt like this, you know they're the real thing. Can you read it? I think it says, I can only help one person a day. Today is not your day. And let me see. What does that say? Tomorrow doesn't look good either. Now, this is Robert Adams type shirt. He always had this sense of humor. He wasn't self-important. As a matter of fact, he didn't really like being looked up to as a guru, except insofar as it helped the student develop. So that question is solved. Any other questions about gurus? Anybody want to raise a question? How to spot a fake guru? Anything? Nothing? You guys really disappointing. You know, where's the drive to understand, to know yourself? God, come on. All right, let's go to chanting. What are we going to do? This is the next part we're going to go deeper now, again. Let's start with the Arati Sadguru. And then Hey Bhagavan right after that. We're trying to go deep now. Volume of Benny? Not coming from outside anymore. Coming from your own body, from your own heart. Let the music emerge from your heart. Let it permeate your entire body and swing with it.
Thank you. the pen and paper in your hand, in your head.
Hey, Bhagavan, hey.
Bhagavan, 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 Bhagavan. Hey Bhagavan, hey Bhagavan, hey Bhagavan, hey Bhagavan, hey.
Bhagavan, Bhagavan, Bhagavan.
Serious note. I want to welcome you with all my heart. I love you all for taking the time to join me in satsang. You could have been doing something important, like getting a beer, going shopping at Macy's, but instead you decided to come here. And I thank you for that. That means I mean something to you, and you all mean something to me. And all kidding aside, it took me 22 years to find my teacher, and I studied with some of the greatest of the teachers. My first was Philip Keplo Roshi in New York, Rochester, New York, world-famous guru, very powerful Zen teacher. Then there were many, many others, like Sasaki Roshi, who was a devil, but a nice devil. Sunsan Sunim, world famous Zen teacher. Muktananda, I was his bodyguard for a while. And then the two kids that took over afterwards. I've been with many, many teachers. I lived at the International Buddhist Meditation Center for many years, and my teacher there who ordained me was Thich Thien Hanh. And it was sort of a center where he welcomed teachers from all over the world. The Dalai Lama made his first visit there back, I think it was 1971 or something like that. And I was part of the security detail, and I got to meet the Dalai Lama and some of the other ones that came later, Shakya Tenzing and many, 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 many teachers. I met many teachers. But in 1989 or 1990, I think it was 89, I'd given up looking for teachers. thought I knew everything. I wasn't happy, but I thought I knew everything. Then one day somebody said, you know, there's somebody you ought to visit. And he wasn't the first person to say this about this person. So, despite my better judgment, I actually went to the satsang. It's a small apartment in Beverly Hills. And when I walked in, there was this man dressed in white sweats with a gray t-shirt, sweatshirt, with a beard. And I walked in and he looked up at me. I had a feeling then, something different about this guy. There must have been only 5 people present. It was a small room, you know, no more than 125 square feet. He sat on the edge of his chair, sort of leaning into the audience. And his eyes were so penetrating. I saw right through you. And then sometimes it didn't seem like there was anybody looking, like he was so empty. There was nobody there, and yet there was something about his eyes. And then I listened to him talk. He was talking about consciousness in the Advaita way, and I had never been exposed to Advaita except for Ramana. I don't remember the words he said that day. But by the end of his talk, I knew I had met my teacher, Robert Adams. Afterwards, I went up and I asked him, "Where have you been my entire life?" And rather than saying, "I've been waiting for you, my son," he said, "Well, I've been around." But after getting to know him for several times, going to lunch and satsangs, he called me aside one day and we went to lunch. And he said, "Ed, you're not my devotee. I want you to be my friend. I have nobody to talk to, and I need somebody to talk to." So my teacher wanted me to be an equal. He wanted to step out of the role of the guru and meet me as a friend, as an equal. And that's how you can tell a guru, if he's willing to step out of the role of being a guru and meet you where you are and bring you up so that you can meet him where he is or she is. Robert's never left me since then. I still feel his presence within me and around me, always. I love him so. I'm so lucky to have met him after 22 years. And seeing literally hundreds of teachers over that period of time. I mean, just visiting him or saying hello or something. But he was different. There was no immediacy like there is with Zen. Being in the moment. Robert was entirely beyond this world. It was like he was here because he had to. And while he was here, he wanted to help people to escape suffering, to join him where he was beyond this world. beyond the body, beyond the mind. And not too many people followed him. I guess I did because I had seen so many teachers and done so many spiritual practices and found them kind of useless. But here's somebody who went entirely beyond the world. That's how you can tell your teacher. He takes you beyond the world. All the way beyond. He takes you out of your suffering into happiness, joy, and to the unmistakable belief that you're not a human. You're more than that. You're more even than God, because God is something you see. You're that principle that sees God. That teacher takes you there as your friend. And I thank you for coming here. Now I want to take you a little deeper into Advaita. I want to read you a little snippets from Nisargadatta. And I all recommend you get this book, Consciousness and the Absolute, little orange book. May 10th, 1980. Maharaj. How did I get to the truth that I prevail everlastingly? By meditating on the meditator. By I amness merging into I amness. Only then did I understand what my true nature is. The great sages meditated in the same way. Nobody had told me how to do it. I did not seek this knowledge externally. It sprouted within me. In other words, the method he advocated of staying with the I am was his own method, and it came to him naturally. Guru didn't teach it to him. It came spontaneously after he listened to the Guru's words that you are not your body. You're something else entirely. Maharaj. In deep sleep, consciousness was in a dormant condition. There were no bodies, no concepts, no encumbrances. Upon the arrival of this apparently wakeful state, with the arrival of the concept I am, the love of I am woke up. And that itself is Maya, illusion. July 29, 1980. Why did this consciousness arise? Maharaj, you are both the question and the answer. All your questions come from your identification with the body. How can any questions relating to that which is prior to the body and consciousness be answered? Can't be answered with the body or the mind. There are yogis who have sat in meditation for many, many years seeking answers to this question, but even they haven't understood it, and yet you are complaining. Questioner, it's a great mystery. Maharaj, it's a mystery only to the ignorant. To the one not identified with the body, it is not a mystery. Maharaj cannot convey this to us. I keep telling you, but you don't listen. Does Maharaj see us as individuals? There are no individuals. There are only food bodies with the knowledge I am. There is no difference between an ant, a human being, and Ishvara. They are all of the same quality. The body of an ant is small, an elephant's is large. The strength is different because of size, but the life force is the same. For such knowledge, the body is necessary. In other words, the body is necessary as a conveyor of truth, but the truth is beyond the body. As an individual, can I go back to the source? Maharaj, not as an individual. The knowledge I am must go back to its own source. Now consciousness has identified with a form. Later it understands that it is not that form and goes further. In a few cases it may reach the space, and very often there it stops. I've warned people over and over again, don't stop with emptiness. Don't stop with the void. A lot of people identify their true nature with the void or with emptiness. He says, in a very few cases, it reaches its source beyond all conditioning. It is difficult to give up the inclination of identifying with the body as a self. I am not talking to an individual, I'm talking to consciousness. It is consciousness which must seek its own source. Out of that no-being state comes beingness. It comes as quietly as twilight, with just the feel of I am, and then suddenly the space is there. In the space, movement starts with air, the fire, the water, and the earth. All these five elements are you only. Out of your consciousness, all this has happened. There is no individual. There is only you. The total functioning is you. The consciousness is you. I am the total universe. When I am the total universe, I am in need of nothing because I am everything. But I cramp myself into a small thing, a body. I made myself a fragment and became needful. I need so many things as a body. In the absence of a body, do you exist? Are you and were you there or not? Attain that state which is prior to the body. Your true nature is open and free, but you cover it up and you give it various designs. So, for many months I've been talking about the I am. Not talking about the absolute. And he's talking about the absolute. Getting to know the absolute through the I am. But you see, for many people, it's hard to find even the I am. The sense of I existing. The sense of self. The sense of being alive. Some people are like living zombies and they don't feel their own existence. They don't feel their bodies. They don't feel emotions. They've become machines. And the first step is to own your I am. To own your presence. To own your life. And to feel that sense of presence expand. And grow powerful. And delight in experiences. Delight in love. Delight in joy. Delight in ecstasy. Delight in happiness. And then a few hours later, to feel anger. To feel empty. To feel lonely. To feel yearning. To feel loss. To feel depression. Hatred. Whatever. It's all part of the I am. The play of consciousness. And you have to own it all. And through owning all the various colors of emotions and love and hatred within the I am and within yourself, a mutation takes place and the I Am is purified. And one day, it's as if it drops away because the Absolute sees itself through the I Am, because the I Am has become invisible, transparent, purified. And then you know who you are. The only one. There is only one. It has 6 billion pairs of human eyes and hundreds of trillions of insect eyes and snake eyes and mammal eyes, but there's only one who perceives this illusion through billions and trillions of illusory eyes. And you know you are that. You are beyond the world. But to go from the machine to the Absolute requires an enlivening of the I Am, a burning intensity of the I Am, a purification of the I Am, a love of the I Am. You love yourself. You love your feelings. But the I Am is only a gate. And one day you have to step beyond the gate. And it's not you who steps beyond the gate, but the gate disappears, leaving only you. And the knowledge of your existence beyond time and space. But the gateway I teach is through the I Am. Otherwise, it's so difficult to obtain. And that's the method. But even more important than the method is the presence of your spiritual friend who knows the way, your teacher, or whomever. Without Robert, I never would have awakened. I was lost after 22 years of spiritual practices of all different kinds and all different kinds of experiences and samadhis. But being with Robert, I knew he was beyond this world. I knew it. And at first I had to be with him to know, what is this? What is this where he is? And then I wanted to be where he is, or was, actually is. And you know, I didn't find it till after he left, and he was no longer around to hold on to this place for me. And the realization came for me. I didn't seek it. I only felt the loss of my Robert. And going inside feeling that loss, I felt the bliss of my own existence. The happiness of my own existence, even while I felt his loss. And I listened to sacred music all the time. And gradually the happiness grew and grew and grew and grew. Until one day I took a shower. And the caress of the water on my back I ask myself, who is feeling this wonderful sensation? I saw nobody was there. Only emptiness, only the space. And the space was me. I was consciousness. I was awareness. But there was no entity named dead. I was the totality. The shower and the experiencer. I was everything. What freedom. What freedom. Freedom from being a body. Freedom from being a human. Of going beyond and becoming the totality. And happiness. And it's taken me probably 15 years to learn how to bring that back for you. To help you find freedom. And it's also taken you loving me that reawakened my own I am. And allows me to touch you better than I could years ago. And for that, I thank you. You've all helped me. Are there any questions?
Sebastian has a question. Let me just unmute you, Sebastian.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you have to speak up, though. I can't hear you too well.
Okay, I'll talk louder. I'm wondering how much time is necessary to put in meditation in order to make spiritual progress. I've heard conflicting things from different people.
As much as you can. As much as you can. If you can sit 10 hours a day, that's good. If you can sit 1 hour a day, it's good. But 10 hours is better than 1 hour. It's persistence over a period of time that is more important than the intensity at any one different time. But you're probably referring to that book by, what's his name? Who says you have to sit all the time?
Nagarjuna?
No.
You're thinking of Langford or something?
Langford.
I haven't read that.
Okay. The more you sit, the better. Formal meditation and informal meditation. If you could devote your whole life to it, do it. But still, the teacher is so important. The presence of a teacher is so important. And the next most important thing is the method of immersing yourself in the I am, of the I am, immersing itself in the I am. Or herself.
Got it.
Okay.
My question is the commitment of the student to the teacher. I realize, based on his question, you could go as fast as you want, but is there a commitment that you as a teacher want from the student in terms of how much time they put in or, you know.
Not really.
Other efforts.
I think generally what a teacher looks for is surrender. Love. Those are two signs a student is ready. And the more surrendered and loving a student is, the more open the teacher will be for them, spend more time with them. Because he feels loved. fee, and that opens the channels. It's automatic. It's not like a mental thing. Well, she's spending 2 hours today and 4 hours tomorrow, et cetera. It's not that at all. It's a very subjective thing. Is the commitment there? Are you serious? Because there's, for every serious student, there's 100 dilettantes and curious people who come and go. Robert, probably the greatest teacher I ever know, in the 6 years that I was with him in Los Angeles, probably 1,000 people went through his satsangs. And there were never more than 50 or 60 people, but hardly anybody lasted more than a year. He was always stirring the pot. He didn't want to have too many people around. He wanted to see who'd stay. And the satsangs were kind of boring and repetitive, too, unless you were really into Robert. So, I stayed. He was my teacher. I knew it. It was me. I was committed. Not that I didn't question him. We all questioned Robert. Why did he do that thing? Why the hell did he do that? What did he do that for? He can't be real. I heard this all the time. He's not realized. Otherwise, he wouldn't have done X. He wouldn't have done Y. He wouldn't have done Z. But he was always stirring the pot. And a lot of people couldn't stand the stirring. And they left. And they missed out. And I just took his shit because I loved him. I trusted him. And I don't give my students shit. I leave that to Facebook. I do it on Facebook sometimes to like Guru Swamiji, and then she gets me back for a while. Any other questions? Does that answer yours, Janet?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, let's do the last chant.
Thank you.
living word. Endless bliss and happiness is readily available. You just have to be open to it. It's already there within you. Just reach down and find it. Happiness for purpose, for no reason. Just yourself.